Punk's not dead, and neither is New Wave. Join Buzz and Ben on Static Rage, the Punk and New Wave Album Review Podcast.
Not that long ago, actually just a few months back, I had to go to New York for business. And it was around Christmas time. And to the shock of no one listening to this album that we are going to talk about today, at least a track from this album, was very prominently discussed on that ship. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am Ben, and with me is Buzz. How are you doing tonight, Buzz?
Well, I'm doing quite well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because while that will be discussed tonight, I'm actually more excited to talk about the thousands that are sailing to this country.
Indeed, indeed. So, to spoil the non-existent surprise, since you'll see the thumbnail and everything, we are talking about If I Should Fall from Grace with God, their studio album by The Pogues. It was released on January 18th of 1988 on Pogue Mahone / Warner Music. Pogue Mahone in UK and Warner Music here in the US. Actually, it looks like it was Pogue Mahone, Warner Music in UK and Europe, while in Island Records in US and Canada. Steve Lillywhite was the producer. Runtime of 51 minutes and 43 seconds for the original album. I listened to the version on Spotify, which has bonus tracks. I did not listen to all the bonus tracks, Buzz did. We'll talk about that later on. But that adds a good 20 minutes to the runtime of the album, thereabouts anyway. The band is Shane McGowan on vocals and guitar, Spider Tracy, tin whistle and vocals, James Fernley, accordion, piano, mandolin, dulcimer, guitar, cello, percussion, and string arrangements, Jim Finner, banjo and saxophone, Andrew Rankin, drums and vocals, Philip Chevron, guitarist, mandolin and vocals, Daryl Hunt on bass, percussion and vocals, Terry Woods on sitar and lute, concertina, strings, banjo, dulcimer, guitar, and vocals. There are several additional musicians who were brought in on this album. Ron Cavanaugh on banjo, spoons, and mandolin. Christian McCool, who provided the female vocals on Fairytale of New York. C1 Shane on harp. Brian Clark, also saxophone. Joe Cashman on tenor saxophone. Paul Taylor, trombone. Chris Lee on trumpet. Haley Thompson on trumpet. Flocker Trench on string arrangements. And the Pogue Choir, which is basically all those other people.
Yeah. So I just want to kick this out. I want to kind of hit the elephant in the room. For those that don't know why this band's called the Pogues, it is short for Pogue Mahone, which it means kiss my ass. And that was the original name for the band. They decided to shorten it, not because they were worried about being sidelined of like being told it's not appropriate. They just were like, that's too far. We just call ourselves the Pogues and that's it. The cool thing about this is Terry Woods is playing on this album. And for those that know, Terry Woods played in a band called Steel I Span, which was a British kind of quasi folk group in a way. They touched on rock a little bit, but they're primarily a folk group. So it was cool to have him kind of come in. Daryl Hunt actually replaced Kate O'Roden. I don't know the specifics of why that happened. I don't know if she just decided to quit because she didn't want to do it anymore, or if they replaced her or what, but she is not on this album, which is, you hear a little bit of that as we talk about it tonight. It's nothing major, but it does kind of change a little bit, as well as a few little minor things. Going into this album is a little bit different from the previous two. And what I mean by that is it's less punk feeling. Like, the songs aren't quite as fast and as aggressive and as in your face and as biting, at least not musically wise. Lyric wise, there's still a few on here that are. However, this marks an interesting point in the band, because the band's actually really fucking good by this point. You've heard me talk about it before on this podcast, if you listen to us, where I mention a lot of times the band gets better as they get older, but they're not quite as punk as they used to be. That's kind of what's happening here. At this point, this is a much better album than the previous ones, but there is a little bit missing, and we'll talk about that later tonight too. That said, if you ever look up the Pogues and you like just type in the Pogues in a search engine, the first song or two that you're going to find are come off this album. That's how popular this album is. And of course, we'll get to that here later tonight. So before I give the mic back, Ben, is this your first time listening to this album the entire way through?
The entire way through, yes. I've heard several of the tracks out here, but I'd never sit down and listen to the entire album.
Yeah, that's most people don't listen to this whole album unless they were into this band around the time that this album came out. This also marks the final time that Shane McGowan will actually actively have any big participation with the band. Shortly after this album is released, he does leave. They have a guy called Spider come in that does well, he was already in the band, but he does the vocals from here on out. He does take over as the primary singer from this point on. So it's something to keep in mind that as they release other albums, if we ever talk about them, they won't have Shane on them. So it's just interesting. It's like, I think it's a nice little farewell to Shane, if you will, because it really does kind of augment like them going back and forth on vocals a few times. And it's actually sad that we didn't get a chance to get that long term.
And speaking of saying farewell to Shane, one of the reasons that it was discussed so much is one of the people who was with me, one of my bosses, is of Irish descent, and their daughters do Irish dancing in competitions and everything, and they are a big Pogues fan. And it was shortly after Shane passed, because he passed in November of last year. So it was on both of our minds as we were walking around the streets of New York. So we discussed it and may or may not have had a little bit of Irish whiskey honor this passing. But yes, I agree with a lot of what Buzz said there. Story time over for now. This album, as opposed to Rum Sodomy and the Lash, which we did last year or the year before, I don't really remember, was much more of a punk album than this. This one is, honestly, it sounds. Let me back up. Flogging Molly, whom we talked about on the last episode that came out, basically fucking laid a stencil over this album and then did a carbon rubbing of it, because this sounds like a Flogging Molly album. Or I guess more appropriately, the Flogging Molly album sounds like the Pogues.
No, and I was going to bring that up tonight anyway. Nothing, last week we talked about Flogging Molly, and I do like that album, and I do like that band. But
Yeah, me too.
let's be honest: if the Pogues didn't exist, I don't think Flogging Molly would exist. I also mentioned something to the effect of the Flogging Molly being more accessible than the Pogues, and I stand by what I said because. Nowadays, yes, they're out there. You can find them on the internet easily. You can go up and bring up YouTube and go, oh, this band was around the 80s. Oh, well, that's cool. Back when Flogging Molly got started, you couldn't do that. It was still kind of the early days of the internet. I mean, you could still find it if you knew where to look, but YouTube didn't exist yet. And you couldn't just go on and punch in a search engine and go, oh, wow, the suggested search is now this other band I've never heard. What's this? So you really had to know about this music to understand it. So in a lot of ways, even though this band came out before and it has, I think Flogging Molly owes a lot of their existence to this band. At the same time, I get why they're not as well known in the States. They're getting more well known, and as the years go by, more and more people know about them. And as I've talked to people before, it's come up in conversations, and people were like, oh, okay, and it may not be their favorite band, but they still understand why I like them, et cetera. And it's kind of this album that I point to because even though I do think that Red Roses and Rum Sodomy and the Lash, I think are better punk albums, I still say, like, if I had to say, if someone said, hey, what do the Pogues sound like? While I would love to give them a copy of those two albums, I'd probably give them a copy of this album. I'd be like, here you go, listen to this. This is kind of what they like. If you like their stuff, let me show you the more biting, angry, aggressive stuff. If you don't like it, well, then you've listened to what everybody knows. So this, by the time this album has come out, this is a very well rehearsed band. Not that they weren't before, but this sounds more like an Irish folk band rather than as a punk band. You will get elements of that. punk spirit here and there. You will get elements of politically charged lyrics, which you get with a lot of Irish music anyway. But
It's about to say.
you do get that little tinge of it, and there are parts in certain songs that hit, but it never quite hits that aggressive tone. And I have an idea of why that might be. I'm not going to make some shit up here, but there was a lot going back between Shane and everyone else in the band. There's a lot of turmoil at this time. This album almost didn't get made, as my understanding, from what was going on, but apparently, like, he held it together just long enough that they could get through it. And for those that don't know, I love Shane McGowan so much. He's an amazing songwriter. But the man had a drinking problem, and he had one bad. If you ever look up his interviews, you can tell. And this is when he's older, so you can only imagine when he's younger, like the years and years have kind of messed with him a little bit. So it's just, I think that's where a lot of this comes from. And it's sad because I wanted to hear more of him and Spider doing back and forth, and him and Terry Woods going back and forth and adding voices, because they really do mesh well here on a few tracks. And that's kind of where my sadness comes from, that this is all we're gonna get. Like, this is the only recording. I mean, someone might have a recording somewhere, but we're not gonna get a whole album, I should say.
Yeah, probably not. A couple of things that I want to touch on from what you said. First, I want to go back and say that, like, in the comparison between the two, the main difference to me is I think Dave King, I personally like him better as a singer than I did Shane. Shane is fine, he's perfectly serviceable for what they're doing. There was a certain, what's the word I'm looking for? A certain melancholy that is throughout this album that is not uncommon in traditional Irish music or even in Irish punk music. Flogging Molly, we talked about some of the tracks last week on their album where they had that, and they have it sprinkled throughout their discography. And you can say the same thing about traditional Irish music too, with like a lot of the traditional songs that the Chief did, the Dubliners, or whomever does. So there's a sense of that here, but there's also like a kind of a New York Lou Reed vibe, and not just because of the fairy tale and sure, but there's just a world-weary observation here in the lyrics that Shane wrote for this album that I'm not going to say is uncommon, because there is definitely roots of that again throughout pop music, rock music, punk music, but something that is not necessarily associated with the Celtic punk subgenre.
Yeah, a lot of your other Celtic punk bands, which I'm sure we'll talk as about that as episodes go on. A lot of them do like a tongue in cheek, where it's almost like a no, I now I'm looking for words. It's almost like a cheap version of, hey, we're an Irish Celtic punk band, even if our singer is Irish. And it's almost like they wear it on the sleeve as more of a way to get you in. This band doesn't do that. This band is, and another thing is, just before we go further, I know I've mentioned it before, but in case you listeners have not heard the last two times we talked about the Pogues, Shane's not actually from Ireland. He is British, but he is of Irish descent, and I believe both his parents are Irish, so he does have that going for him. So it's always interesting when people bring up this band and how they always get looped into Irish punk, and I always have to remind people, well, yeah, technically they are, kind of like how Dropkick Murphys are, but they're not actually from Ireland. So just FYI, I appreciate, where they came from, and sure, Shane can actually go back and, like, look, both my parents are from there. There you go. But he himself is not. And so it's important to draw that distinction, because there's a sense of humility there that you don't get with some other Irish punk bands. And I won't name them as of right now, but if we ever talk about them, I will. And it's just, it's there's a sense of honesty with this band that you don't always get with most of the Celtic punk bands.
Well, and to that point, like, if the internet is to be believed, which sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't, the reason he was born in England is that his parents were traveling at the time of his birth. But he did spend at least a portion of his early childhood in Ireland. So These things matter, and it is a complex political and social religious web over there that I have an understanding of, but I am no expert of. But we bring this stuff up because it is important in context, especially to people who live there. Whereas we here in America, some of us care, some of us don't, but not centering our experience in this.
I will extrapolate on that just slightly. The first year we did this, I believe it was on the first Dropkick Murphys album we did, I brought up the term plastic Patty. Shane McGowan has been accused of that before, like vehemently so. Usually, I don't think the accusation lasted like overly for a long period, and it wasn't by anyone relatively important. But he has been called a plastic Patty before. And that's why I kind of bring this up. Not saying he is doing that at all, because it's not what he's doing, but it's interesting how many people from that region will coin that term and use it against people that are not from there, even though they have that descent. I'm gonna be like Ben, I'm not gonna go into that, because that's a whole long another long ass discussion we could have. But it's just one something I wanted to bring up. It's interesting that that tends to come up a lot, and it's there's a whole set of arguments we could have, and that's not what we're here to do.
Yeah,
It's
it's
just
hundreds of
it,
years of history. I mean,
yeah,
like the
it's that interesting point of like, oh, by the way, FYI, here's this piece of information. Do with it what you will. And that's just it. I mean, there's an old joke I heard growing up when I was a kid. Was it the ever since the famine, Ireland lies in New York. So, I mean, you can take that and run with it if you want to, but no, it's interesting that this band, like you, and it's the fact that the country kind of embraced Shane. It really did. If you look up his funeral, especially, man, it's I it yeah, it is just it's amazing how much outpouring of support there was for him. So, I personally think the plastic Patty term on him is unfair, but it's just throwing out there that yes, he's been accused of that before.
Yeah. I mean, my own lineage is Goth Irish, but it's so far back that it's not even worth me having an opinion on this. That's as far as the Plastic Patty stuff goes. So back to the music. Man, this is as and Buzz has already laid this out too. Incredibly well played. This is a fantastic album musically from beginning to end, from tip to stern. Fantastic. Right up there with anything else that we have ever had on the podcast.
Yeah, no, this is I and I sometimes people think I'm making this bigger than it is. I'm not joking when I say this is one of the better albums out there if you're into Celtic punk music. Like, if you've never heard this album, you need to go listen to it right now. Like, pause this podcast, go listen to this album, then come back, because I gotta tell you, it's that good. So I guess spoiler alert for how I'm gonna grade this tonight, but it's something that even whatever negative I have to say about this album, it doesn't take away from the fact that holy shit, this is an awesome band. And I think if you take the word punk out of the band, you have a pretty damn good, genuine Celtic album, and it really does fit with that. I cannot stress enough, the everything is on point, the playing is on point. This sounds like a band that practices all the time. They're all accomplished musicians by this point. And the most important thing to me, though, is they sound like they're having fun. This does not sound like they're going through the paces. There's some bands, when you listen to them, it's like, okay, yeah, they're really good at what they do, but man, some of the chemistry is lacking. With all the issues that was going on with this band at the time, that doesn't come out. It really feels like they were having fun when they were recording this, and I think that's incredibly important for a band.
I do too. And I don't I think there are certain tracks where they certainly sound like they're having fun, and there's other tracks where I don't necessarily know there. And the only bad things that I'll say about this album, and I'll go ahead and get those out of the way, are that I think that even without the remastered bonus tracks, that it's just slightly too long, and that there are some songs that are just good. And if it's just that they're good, that's a very minor complaint.
And that's just it. Like, this is one of those albums where you have a curse of you have a few songs on here that are really, really, really good. And of course, they stand out. And if someone listening to this doesn't know what to listen for. They're only going to hear those specific songs that they've heard either not so much on the radio, but they've heard other people talk about. And then that's all they'll ever listen to. And it's like, no, dude, you have a whole ass album of songs that are good. You really should listen to this whole thing. But that is up to the listener. I can't force someone to listen to what I would tell them listen to, which is where we come in because we can give our opinions. So yeah, the production of this is amazing. It was definitely produced very well. We're talking about musicianship. I will talk just really quick about Shane's voice, even though he's not the only vocalist on this album. I kind of prefer the other Terry Woods on vocals. I kind of prefer hearing Spider on vocals sometimes. I think they're a little more clear. I know that that's sacrilege to people that are really into the Pogues, but here's what I'm going to say, going back to what Ben said about Dave King and Flogging Molly. While I, and I've said this before, I don't think Shane McGowan is a great singer. I don't even think he's a good singer. However, he is an amazing songwriter because a lot of the stuff he wrote for the band came off the first two albums. Now, he's not the only writer on this one, but he's still the primary writer. And the fact that he was a driving force for so long, I tend to call it like the Bruce Springsteen effect, to where I'm going to say the same thing about the Boss as I'm about a lot of other bands. Good songwriters don't mean good singers. It makes them great songwriters, and I appreciate that for the art that it is, but that doesn't mean that they can sing. That's kind of the way with Shane. I'm not listening to Shane because I think he's an awesome singer. I'm listening to Shane because he wrote this fucking banger of a song, and while he is just not very good vocally, that is what makes the song, because he sounds like an average person singing an average song, and that makes it, to me, it gives me a much better experience than someone who's an accomplished vocalist. So that's what I'm going to lead on with tonight. Just because I don't think they're a good singer doesn't mean I don't think it works, because I think that makes that's what makes a lot of these songs work, is for his vocals.
I completely agree as far as this particular album goes. And I do think that you can be an excellent songwriter without being a good vocalist. Cough, Bob Dylan, cough, or Steve Earle for that matter, whom I adore. And neither one of them could really sing their way out of a paper sack. There are certain people who are fans of their voice, but they are not classically trained. I do think that a good vocalist can take someone else's words and turn them into something majestic. But I also agree that oftentimes there is something much more powerful about hearing the person who penned the words and has that emotional connection to them do it. So I always try whenever I hear a cover song that I like, if I know who the person who wrote it was, I do try and track down their version of it just to listen to it. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. But again, that's me going off on a tangent. It works here. So. And again, with this genre of music, I can't think of anybody off the top of my head in punk who I think was a really great singer who had a really great voice. I mean,
I mean, we could probably name like a handful, but
I was Billy Idol's pretty good, but that's
Billy Idol, Clint Danzig, Mike Graves.
sure, Glenn Danzig.
These are anomalies. I'm going to agree with you. I'm not going to say that it's all of them, but there's like a few we could pick out.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, back to this album as we have digressed again. I do agree with that. You can really tell that Shane shines as especially a lyricist. Something that I have found to be true about writing is that generally the best writers are the people who have read a lot, and everything that I've ever heard about Shane or read about him states that he was very literary and that he read a lot, like from classics of literature like Dostoevsky to other stuff. And being exposed to that written word really does help you as a writer. It also helps if you actually write. I add parenthetically, hi, my friends who might be listening to this who say you're writers but haven't written anything in several years. Not saying you're not, but if you're going to call yourself a writer, you actually need to write. Anyway, I digress again. So Back to this album, man. I've said just about everything that I can think to say about it without getting into track. So I'm ready to do that whenever you are.
First off, I'm just going to say thank you for taking us to church with that, because I was sitting here like with my mic off going, "Preach, brother." Especially about the writing part. You have it, it's like every other thing. Writing's a perishable skill. People can say it's not all they want, but it is. You'll never truly forget how to do it, but you will forget how to compose things correctly and how to put thoughts on paper. Yes, it can come back to you quickly, but you still have to practice at it. So just FYI. That said,
Let me interject real quickly in there. Yeah, man, you're right. And I'm not like saying that you're not a writer just because you haven't written in a long time, but if you're going to identify with yourself as a writer, get back into writing. The first few things you write might suck, but just get back to it because that's what revision is for. And you can always turn it into something anyway. I'll get back off my high horse after having just jumped back on it.
I think we all appreciate that, or at least I do anyway. Here we are, two guys in a punk podcast talking academically. Oh man, but no, the I'm agree. I think I've pretty much said everything I need to say. There's a few songs on here that go across with the literary sense. There's actually a few references to Rime of the Ancient Mariner, for example, on more than one song. So that's something to kind of think about too. There's a few other here. When I get to the down to the specific the songs, I'll bring them up as well. But there's the fact that this man has like read a lot and taken in a lot of information and then gone, you know what, that's a good idea. I'm gonna make this one quick line in this song to it, and I'm gonna see how many people actually pick up on it. That's like intelligence in motion, and I appreciate that. And with that, I'll be done.
All right, then I take it you want me to list the tracks that I liked first.
Yeah, you can go ahead. I'll
Cool.
let you do this one.
I mean, honestly, I think that there's a lot on here to like. There's a couple that like the medley, while it is good, I'm not super duper into. So I'm really just going to focus on the meaning that even though I think this is kind of long, I think you can listen to all of it and enjoy it. But the ones that stick out to me is really the first half of the album. It's If I Should Fall from the Grace with God, Turkish Song of the Damned, which is probably my favorite track on the album. I love that song. Bottle of Smoke, Fairy Tale of New York, that's a classic for a reason. Thousands Are Sailing, South Australia. I mean, that's the there's 15 tracks on the original release, and I just named seven of them.
Yeah, no, I'm actually going to agree with just about everything on there. Even though this album is a little on the long side, Metropolis is actually cool. I'm jumping ahead. Metropolis and the Battle March Medley are both the two instrumentals on this album, and it actually kind of works because they have a nice little break in what's going on. So it's kind of interesting how it got produced that way. So let's talk about from going down straight down. If I Should Fall from Grace of God, that is one of the most overplayed songs, not in a bad way, but there was actually a few years ago, there was a commercial for a car company that used it in their commercial. And I remember hearing it going, what the hell? That's the Pogues. Like I'm sitting there with my dad at the time, and I was making some food, and I heard it playing. I'm like, the hell? Are you listening to the Pogues? And walk in, I'm like, what the hell is a soccer mom doing with her kids? Why are the Pogues playing on this? So it's kind of funny how that works out, but it's funny because it's a very safe song of all things. But it's very energetic. I think it's a very good way to start the album off. Turkish Song of the Damned is one of my favorite ones on here. This is the one that there's a lot of references to Rime of the Ancient Mariner. There's even references to a creature called a Slua, which is kind of like a fairy. There's a part where the chorus where it says, "Did you keep a watch for the dead man's wind? Did you see a woman with a comb in her hand?" They're talking about the Slua, that's the dead man's wind, and the woman with a comb in her hand is a thing to the banshee. Also, as it comes down to wailing away on the wall in the strand, is the banshee singing out. So there's a lot of references to that just in the chorus. The second verse is almost it's specifically about Rime of the Ancient Mariner. It's about a it's about having the albatross on your neck. That the whole line is about that. This is essentially a song about revenge on the seas, which can be you can put it You can actually put it on something more modern, as like being pissed off at someone and kind of like their everything they've done is coming back to haunt them through you, because you're the, it happened to you and now you're coming back with some kind of revenge. So it's kind of interesting how that works out. But what's cool about this is it goes from very much a almost Middle Eastern sound to an Irish jig and back and forth again, which is what I really liked about it. I never get tired of listening to that song. As we go down, Bottle of Smoke is good. Bottle of Smoke is like the probably the most punk song on here. It's very fast, it's very quick, it sounds kind of like a sea shanty, but it's very aggressive, it's very irreverent. That's what I liked about it as well. And it's really a song about gambling and the things you encounter while gambling, and it kind of gets dark at times, so it's you should give it a listen. I think the elephant in the room with this is Fairy Tale of New York. This is the most overplayed song. If you type in the Pogues, that is the first fucking song that pops up. It's very much a Christmas song, even though without meaning to be. But every year on Christmas, I listen to it. It's kind of a, I, it's like I listen to that song and I watch Die Hard. That's what I do for Christmas Eve. But Kristen McCall is actually a very, very awesome singer. So she was taken too soon from us as well. But they actually played this song in Shane's funeral, and it worked out so amazingly well. Like everyone in that church got up and was dancing when the band was playing it. So it was just that's there's a good heartfelt goodbye to that because of how popular that song was. From there it goes into Metropolis, and Metropolis is cool because it sounds almost like I would call it like an immigrant song, because there's a lot of brass involved in it. It sounds, I've always said it evokes images of like a very busy street from like the 1940s, 1950s. But then it goes back to a very Irish reel or even a jig, and then goes back to it again with the piano and the brass. So it's kind of going back and forth, and it kind of feels like the immigrant feel, which is important because, oh, lo and behold, I think the best song on this album comes in. That's going to be Thousands Are Sailing. This is not their song. Well, it is, but it's the one only one that was not written by Shane. He had no involvement in it, other than singing this. This is a very poignant song. It's a very biting song. I call it the anthem, if you will. If How the Gods Kill is what Glenn Danzig is well known for, to me, Thousands Are Sailing is what the Pogues are known for. So if you can make that association, you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. That is the ultimate immigrant song. It is both sad and triumphant at the same time. Everything on that lyric wise goes from being overly depressed, and the fact of the matter is, after the chorus, Shane says, "And we dance to the music, and we dance because time keeps going. Everyone through bad and worse, everyone that gets here, you don't always have a handout." One of my favorite lines, Josh draws tickets in the lottery. That's you're not always going to get what you want. Yes, you're coming to a new land, but you might get the short end of the stick. Some of you may never see this. That is it. It speaks a lot to me because it's almost the Irish immigrant experience in a way. And I think that's exactly what they were going for. And to me, they fucking nailed it. So that is my favorite song on this album. South Australia is cool. South Australia is a sea shanty that's traditional. And the way they did it, it's very fast. It's very fun. It's a very break in what seems like almost like a sad tone. Today we're going back to being fun again, which again goes into Fiesta. Now, Fiesta, they play a lot. Fiesta is actually, when I first heard the song when I was younger, I didn't like it. As I got older, I started to enjoy it more and more. And I think the reason I didn't like it is because Shane is very being Shane on it. But the initial line is, "I am Francisco Vasquez Garcia." And if you don't know who he is, there's a professor at the University of Cadiz by that name. He has written on sexuality, specifically hermaphroditism and male homosexuality in Spain between 1850 and 1960, among other topics. He is someone you should look into. He's a very interesting individual. Just you really should look into it. There's a correlation between him and a character in a film called Straight to Hell, which is something you should look up as well. But there's a lot of dirty lyrics. One of the lyrics in the first verse is, We have the song of the Chonchocha, which if you know what that is, Chonchona, if you know what that is, I'm not gonna spell it out in case the kids are around, but it's a Spanish word for a feminine part. And it's fucking funny with the way they're going back and forth with it. This is where this band kind of gets more punk to me because they're both being intelligent with it, but they're also being very in your face about it. I love it. I love everything about it. It's just a very fun song. Going back a little bit, last week when we talked about Flogging Molly, there was a song in there, and I said, this kind of reminds me of the song Fiesta, and this is what I'm talking about. So you should go listen to that one as well because there's a lot of correlation. So it's very fun, and then they go into a medley. What's cool about the medley is the recruiting sergeant is awesome, and it starts off with Terry Woods doing the vocals on it, which I actually prefer. And then they break into Rocky Road to Dublin as kind of the bridge. They don't do any vocals on that, and they go into the Galway Races. And if you've never heard the Galway Races, last year we talked about the Dubliners, and that was one of the songs that they did on the album that we talked about. And it's a very fun song. It's very enjoyable. So it's kind of cool how they just it broke off, and you get some really enjoyable, funny, amusing, or just rousing songs. And then it goes to, I think, the second best song on here. That's The Streets of Sorrow or The Birmingham Six. This is starts off as a very sad song again. And just like with the previous medley, it starts off with Terry Woods singing The Streets of Sorrow, which is it's a very poignant song. It's about the troubles in Northern Ireland. It's very, very specific and to the point. And then it goes straight into The Birmingham Six. Which, if you don't know what that is, it's about six Irishmen that were sentenced to life imprisonment in 1975 due to false convictions for the Birmingham bomb pub bombings. They were not declared unsatisfactory and then released until 1991. So it's a very long time to be in prison for. So the fact this was written during that time is kind of telling, as far as I would be concerned. That song almost got banned. That's why I say to me, even though it's not as aggressive as a punk song as you might think, lyrically, that is probably the second most punk song on this album. And that's why I enjoy listening to it a lot. It's one of my favorites. Everything else as we go down, the next one that really sticks out to me is Sit Down by the Fire. It's a very enjoyable song. I've always enjoyed it. It's very short. The other songs on here are good. What I will say, what's amusing is they end the song with Worms. And if you don't know what that is, it's a very dark, depressing song. And I fucking love the fact they end with it. It's about being dead and worms going inside your skull. So there we go. If there's any question, this is not a punk album, it's with that. Before I give the mic back over, there are bonus tracks we didn't really listen to when we heard this one, but I'm going to touch on those as well. Because the ones that really stick out are the Irish Rover and the Mountain Dew. Both of those are done with the Dubliners. And I would encourage everyone listening to this to go listen to those. Because if you ever want to hear what a traditional folk band sounded like singing with a very cool punk band at that time, you should go listen to it because they mesh so well, it's not even funny. Hearing Ronnie Drew and Shane McGowan go back and forth. It's taken it to another level to me. So I get that little transcendent, if you will, feel to this that just makes it more like what's old is new and what's new is old again. It just mixes them both well. And with that, I will give the mic back to you, Ben.
Well, okay, thank you. Was there something that I wanted to say? I don't think there was, so I guess I will just go into grades here. Oh, there actually was something I wanted to say. Would remember it. Fairchild, New York is so ubiquitous that it has gone as a single 6 times platinum in the United Kingdom. So, as
When
of today.
I was going to expand on that, and I'm actually glad you brought it up because I forgot to mention it. After Shane died, Fairytale New York became almost like an unofficial anthem of Ireland because apparently everyone was fucking singing it like from his death day up until his funeral, up until the new year. Like that's how popular it got. So if there's any question of longevity. If there's one song that's going to be remembered, like till the end of time, it's going to be that one from this band.
Yeah. So now it's time to grade this. Those of you who are unfamiliar, welcome to the fact we grade these albums. You will find that I give one total grade, and then it's a summation of everything, whereas Buzz, this is custom, gives two grades. My grade for this is going to be an A minus. I do not think it is a perfect album, but it's certainly a fun one. It has legendary, as we just discussed, tracks on it that may be a bit overplayed, but are legends for reasons, plus a whole bunch of other songs that are just as good, if not better. And I don't think you can really ask for anything more. The only reason I'm not giving it an A is because it's just so long, and because it is still, it might not be super punky, but because it is still in the punk genre, a lot of the tracks are short. The medleys are okay, but they detracted from my enjoyment of it. So with them being so short, that means that there's a lot of tracks on here, and not all of them rise above just being good.
So, as Ben put out, I like to put out two grades. Mostly it's because I like being difficult, but it's also because I try to be as objective and subjective as I can. And the reason I say that is this is a punk album review. And some bands and some songs are really good at being punk and some aren't. So, I'm going to lead off by saying, as a punk album, just as a punk album, not as a band, just as a punk album, I give this a C. There are a few songs on here that kind of hit those marks, but they never really reach it. Fairytale of New York, thousands or not thousands, Bottle of Smoke and Streets of Sorrow are like the most punk songs on here as far as lyrics go, in my opinion. That makes it just okay. Now, if you're still listening and like not being upset, as an album, as a band, I'm gonna give it a fucking solid A. Because everything on here checks all the marks for me. It's one of those things where it's like I would probably meld this into one thing if I didn't have the punk moniker hanging over it. If someone ever said, no, punk is overplayed, you shouldn't say it like that, they're just a band, we'd be having a different discussion, but this is a punk band at the end of the day, so I have to give two grades. I give it an A. The only reason it's not getting an A plus for me is for the exact reason that Ben is not giving it an A, it's giving it an A minus instead of an A. It's the length of the album. There are a few things I would have cut out to make it a little bit better. I don't think you needed two medleys on here, for example, even though they're good. I do think it stretches out a little bit much. I'd probably leave one or two songs off to shorten it as well. But the ones I pointed out that I talked in depth about, I think are probably the most important ones on here. And I just, yeah, that's where I'm at with this. This is, I think with this from the Shane era, I do think overall this is the best album they have.
I don't think I disagree with you.
So
So,
with that said, Ben, would you go buy this if you saw it sitting in a record store?
yeah, man, I buy it.
I would hope people know by now, but I definitely would too. And I would encourage everyone, if you like this kind of music and you don't have a Pogues album, start with this one.
For sure. All right, my man, what are we doing next time?
Well, I like to always leave things out and not be blatant about it, but I have to tell you, man, my fingers are a little bit stiff right now from all the typing I've been doing. And this might be a little blatant, but I think we need an alternative Ulster happening. And if you picked up what I'm talking about, you know what it is. If you don't, well, I guess I'll have to wait and find out.
Indeed, you will. And we'll catch you next time here on Static Rage. Thanks for listening.
Sláinte.